Well, today we want to take a Friday break from breaking news for a conversation with Billy Mills. He was born in 1938. He grew up on the Pine Ridge Reservation as a member of the Lakota Nation, rejected by both Indian and white culture because his parents were mixed. Then both his parents died before he was a teenager, so he turned to running, which helped ease the pain but didn't end the discrimination he experienced, even as a top athlete. He thought about suicide. Then at the 1964 Olympics in Tokyo, Billy Mills did this.
He's passing the morning.
Look at Mills!
Look at Mills. Billy Mills came from nowhere to win the gold medal in the 10,000-meter race, the only American ever to do that. And Billy Mills joins us from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. And I'm wondering, just hearing that little snippet so many years ago, but what happens when you hear that?
You know, when I hear that, I quickly live the journey, not the destination. And I also live the daily decisions we make in life. Not just the talent we possess, that choreographs our destiny. And over again, it just reminds me that we have that opportunity to choreograph our journey.
So you talk about what? Seeing a bigger picture when you hear that and not focusing on those actual moments? What are you saying?
I see a flashback to my dad. My mom died when I was 8. And as I mourned my mother, my dad told me I had broken wings. And he said, I'm going to share something with you. And if you follow it, someday you may have wings of an eagle. He told me to look beyond the hurt, the hate, the jealousy, self-pity. All of those emotions destroy you. He said, look deeper and way down deeper where the dreams lie. You've got to find a dream, son. It's the pursuit of a dream that'll heal broken souls.
Is this still, I'm not sure what I'm hearing, is this still emotional for you to speak those words of your dad?
It took years.
Yeah.
It's very emotional. It took years before I could share it because I'd start crying. And that led me so close to suicide. I was a junior in college, and it was not the University of Kansas that broke me. I had an incredible support system at the University of Kansas. It was the conflicts within America that broke me.
Do I understand at one point, and this was unbelievable to read, they were taking a group photo and they asked you to step out of the photo because you were mixed?
It was at the USA National Track and Field Championships once and twice at the USA Collegiate, NCAA Collegiate National Championships. And that was kind of the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I started breaking. My junior year in college, before I leave the meet, before I go back to the University of Kansas, I go to my hotel room, and I'm going to jump. I didn't hear words. I felt movement of energy in my whole body, and it was as if my dad's voice was forming energy that spoke, don't. And I remembered him telling me, you need a dream to heal a broken soul. I got off the chair, crying. I wrote down my dream, Olympic 10,000-meter run. Gold medal. The Creator has given me the ability. The rest is up to me.
You wrote this down?
I wrote it down first in my mind, then I started writing it down on a piece of paper.
Well, and just remind people, you were a runner, as you've been saying, but you hadn't had the times that made people think, oh, sure, this guy could win the 10,000.
I did not have the times, but also I was struggling with later, when I graduated from college, became an officer in the Marine Corps, I was diagnosed as hypoglycemic. I go low blood sugar.
Right.
And I'm type 2 diabetic. Back in those days, they would call it borderline diabetic. Most doctors would tell me I'm still not diabetic, but I know how to be diabetic every day if I choose what to eat. So my whole college career, I was running low blood sugar. For whatever reason in high school, my coach, a Potawatomi Indian, a Tony Coffin, I would tell him, I would say, Coach, I feel like I don't have any energy before a race. And he would say, 10 minutes before the race, I'm going to give you some honey. So I would take a couple ounces of honey. And I never went low in high school. So I came out one of the top milers, and I think I was ranked number 2 in the nation in the 2 mile, and got many scholarship offers, chose the University of Kansas. Once I got to college, it was a different story. The first time I was racing, I had my own little jar of honey. And I remember the coach taking my my jar of honey away from me and saying, this is college. We do it a different way. So all through college, I ate 4 to 4.5 hours before competition. And those people that are like me, hypoglycemic, we have to eat every 2.5 to 3 hours. Otherwise, we start going low blood sugar and losing energy.
Well, and when I'm reading about this, I'm wondering, too, that the combination of the low blood sugar, which makes people depressed. It's people know when they've got that low blood sugar at the end of the day, they get sad, and diabetics certainly know about this. And that combined with the fact that you were so discriminated against, asked to step out of photos by these national organizations, the combination of the low blood sugar and the discrimination must have really done a number on you.
It was absolutely to where I there was actually three times I thought of suicide.
Yeah.
And I understand now it was low blood sugar. It was the depression that comes with low blood sugar. And not knowing how to deal with low blood sugar. I'm amazed the fact that I had a world record, the only person from the Western Hemisphere to win a gold medal in the 10,000-meter run. And I often wonder, what would have happened if I knew how to deal with low blood sugar, hypoglycemia?
Right.
My wife says, my God, you're 76 years old. Just let it go. But I think it might have been a very intriguing career.
Well, you had a pretty good career. Anyway, inside and out of running, Billy Mills received the Presidential Citizens Medal for his work as the national spokesperson for Running Strong for American Indian Youth, work that continues today. And he's also been outspoken in the movement to remove the name of the Washington Redskins. But we are celebrating the 50th anniversary of Billy Mills' gold medal at the 1964 Olympics. Some of his memories, but also, as we just heard, some of his regrets. You're listening to Here and Now. Welcome back to our conversation with Billy Mills, the upset winner of the gold medal in the 10,000-meter race 50 years ago at the 1964 Olympic Games in Tokyo, the only Native American, or American for that matter, to ever win that race. Billy's currently back in the news because he's one of many Native Americans saying the Washington Redskins should change their name. We're going to ask him about that. But we want to go back to that race 50 years ago. We want to hear more of it. And Billy Mills, you said at the time you were thinking of lapping the Kenyan runner. You know, other runners were boxed in. You made a move. How does this work? Do you still remember that? Do you dream it?
Oh, I remember very, very clearly. I remember my simple strategy was to go with the leader, to go with Ron Clark, assuming he was going to lead, and stay in contact. I felt I was conditioned to run at the best in the world for 6 miles. 10,000 meters is 6.2 miles. So I felt whether I drop at the end of 6 miles or whether I'm still fighting to win a gold, I'm going to be with the leaders with two laps to go.
They're going to break the Olympic record if they continue on this pace.
A lap to go, I remembered reading where Cook from New Zealand,
Tony Cook,
had boxed Ron Clark in the Commonwealth Games a year earlier in the 10,000 meters, and he beat Clark. So I see 15 yards ahead of us, Temu from Kenya. So I get on Clark's shoulder, and I'm going to run into the back of Temu. Obviously, he's going to slow down. When he slows down, I was going to start my kick. Ron tapped me a couple of times. I kind of tapped him back, and we leaned into each other, and he pushed me out.
Clark refuses to let Mills go around him. They're battling for the championship of the world. They're battling shoulder to shoulder. They're knocking men off the track. They had to move a man. Clark moves out in front.
I thought I was going to fall. I closed on his shoulder. Gamudi from Tunisia saw the moment to strike.
And now here comes Gamudi of Tunisia. He takes the lead, followed by Clark of Australia.
As he started to strike, I recovered and got back on Clark's shoulder and cut Gamudi off. He either had to slow down or try to squeeze through. He tried to squeeze through, so I'm pushed again. Clark's pushed.
Gamudi is out in front. No, Clark is taking him.
So I let them go, keeping them in sight while I'm trying to recover. 100 meters to go. I knew my wife was 32 seats up. I had designated that point. I wanted to be with the leaders and make one final effort. But I'm 8 yards behind. A runner from lane one behind Clark and Gamudi. They go by him. He floats out to lane four. He's right in front of me. Momentarily, I panic. He moves to lane five, probably 85 meters to go. He opens up the lane for me. I look down the finish. Nobody's in front of me. I can see them getting ready with the finish tape. It was like, now, I've got to go now. As I go by the runner and I glance out of the corner of my eye in the center of his jersey. I saw an eagle, and it was so powerful. Back to my dad, son, if you do these things, someday you can have wings of an eagle. It was just so powerful. It was wings of an eagle. I can win. I can win. I can win. 30 meters to go. I may never be this close again. I've got to do it now. Wings of an eagle. I won, and I felt the tape.
Here comes Mills of the USA! Mills of the USA! He won! He won!
An official came up, and if I understand right, his words were, "Who are you? Who are you?" And I said, I said, did I miscount the laps? He said, new Olympic champion. So I said, number one? I've raised my finger, number one? And he said, new Olympic champion. I go to find the runner with the eagle on his singlet to tell him that that eagle helped me win. I found him, and there was no eagle.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a perception. And I feel so strongly that perceptions can create us. Our perceptions can destroy us. And we can choreograph our journey to some extent. We can choreograph the daily decisions we make in life. And that's simply what I tried to do. And that all started through the theme of sport.
Well, and I guess you do remember that race every step of the way. And to these spiritual beliefs, you've said you want to devote your life to giving back, especially to young Native Americans, that past American policy created some of the appalling conditions for them today. There was extermination, then terminating treaty rights, relocation to reservations. But in the time we have, we want to get your thoughts on the controversy in the news today. The name of the Washington Redskins, you feel very strongly that it should be changed.
Oh, absolutely. And I like to isolate that and try not to lump in other sports teams' names, which ultimately we need to address. But when you look at the Washington Redskins, it goes back in my mind and in the minds of many, many young Native American people and more of our young people being educated today. The Redskin was basically a bounty that was paid for the bloody scalp and hair of a Native American person who was scalped probably while he or she was alive, and taken that bloody scalp, drying the hair sticking to it, to the blood, taking that into a fort, for example, and you're paid a bounty. You're paid a higher bounty for the woman and the child.
Do you think of that every time you hear that name?
It doesn't go away. I can force it to go away. It will not destroy me. But if, as a country, if we are going to choreograph our journey into the 21st century and into the 22nd century, we have to meet with, say, for example, the youth of the world, and we have to have dialogue of that don't begin with conflict on how we can empower the world and through the world empower ourselves, in a sense. We cannot get stuck with, well, there's only 5 million Indian people, and let's say 80% of them are offended by the Redskins. There still are those few tribes that allow themselves to be sports teams' mascots. But I just want to isolate Redskin. But to truly understand maybe how I feel, I can't speak for all of Native Americans. And the owner of the Washington Redskins, I never met the gentleman, but I'm sure he's a very dignified man, and I'm sure he's been a very humanitarian individual also. But he's in the wrong country to try to say he's honoring us by naming a football team after us, Redskins, when I just explained what Redskins means to me. To truly understand where he's coming from, he needs to be in Germany. As a very successful man, I think he's a Jewish man, and he needs to try to name a soccer team after the ancestors of the 6+ million Jewish men, women, and children that were killed in concentration camps. Hmm. He needs honoring them with a sports team's mascot with the Jewish slur. Hmm. Is the only way you can truly compare how we might feel in America. Otherwise, well, you're not comparing apples with oranges.
Yeah. Well, Billy Mills, with quite a lot to talk about there, a member of the Lakota Nation, winner of the 10,000-meter gold medal at the 1964 Olympics 50 years ago this year. Thank you so much for speaking with us about a number of things. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, some of that was probably difficult to listen to. Some people don't remember where the phrase redskin comes from, but obviously other Americans can't forget. You're listening to Here and Now.